Everyone, here is Amandla, our weekly African current affairs program produced both in English and French. My name is Helden, and I'm here today with Doug and Gwen as usual. How are you guys doing?
We're doing fine, thanks. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. So what do we have today for our listeners? Gwen, maybe you can go first.
Well, sure. I'm really happy to be able to rebroadcast on Amandla one of a series of interviews that Feroz Manji of Diraja Press is doing. He's been talking to militants all over the world about activism and coping with COVID-19. And so the piece that we're going to be rebroadcasting tonight is his interview with Gacheke Gachichi, who is from Nairobi, Kenya. He's with the Materi Social Justice Center. And they have a very interesting conversation about the challenges of COVID-19 in informal settlements in Nairobi.
Thank you for that. And Doug, what do you have lined up for us?
Well, an article caught my eye in Jacobin magazine about how Cuba was sending health personnel and materials and pharmaceuticals to Italy to help with the tragic outcome that's gone on there. And there's Cuba, little Cuba, tiny island under embargo. And boy, the international solidarity, do they ever stand up to the plate? So I've got an interview with Elizabeth Hill from the Canadian Network for Cuba. She'll explain all about it and tie it to how Cuba and Africa go back a distance as well. And then in addition, I managed to find a number of songs done by African artists, Bobby Wine, Yen Amar, and of course, not without talking, President George Weah of Liberia, that refer to COVID. So stay tuned.
The bad news is that everyone is a potential victim, but the good news is that everyone is a potential solution. Sensitize the masses to sanitize, keep a social distance and quarantine.
Stop! The coronavirus is sweeping over mankind.
Everybody must be alert, it's a global pandemic we can never take for granted. It's a matter of life we can never take for granted. Discipline and personal hygiene, and make sure you regularly wash your hands. Keep a distance from everyone. Report anything like a symptom. Serious fever is a symptom. Try Tamala is a simple tom. Itchy eyes and flu is a simple tom.
Well, Bobby Wine, let me first tell you a little bit about him. He's an artist, a musician from Uganda, who gained very wide popularity amongst the youth and in the poor ghettos of the urban areas in particular, but as well right across the country, to the point that he actually moved from music to politics and is now known as the ghetto president. Much to the chagrin of President Museveni, who has reacted in typical fashion, very brutally. Bobby has spent time in prison. He's been tortured, beaten brutally. People generally who stand up to Museveni get that model. But here he is once again with this music that you just heard, singing, setting a role model for what the regime should be doing. Educate and publicize. He says, sensitize to sanitize. And he says, the bad news is that everyone is a potential victim, but the good news is that everyone is a potential solution. So this is the kind of thing that a state should be doing. And given that music and radio are so important, we're happy that people like Bobby Wine are standing up to the show. So next door in Kenya, though, lots going on.
Oh boy, well, there sure is. So Feroz Manji recently had an opportunity to speak with Gacheke Gachichi, who is with the organization Materle Social Justice Center in Nairobi, Kenya. And they talk about, or he talks about, the challenges of COVID-19 in informal settlements in Nairobi. This is an organization that has long fought for social justice in Materre. It's a long history of repression. So the context in which COVID-19 is occurring here is monumental. It kind of just defies the imagination. So we're going to go to that in a moment. But Feroz just posted on Facebook an image and a quote from Gacheke Gachichi that I think summarizes it quite well, and it's a photograph of a shack in Materre, and the quote is, imagine 21 days of isolation. Now imagine it in a shack with no electricity, no water, no heat, no sewage, and no internet. So they cover this over the next 21 minutes. Take a listen. It's fascinating, it's instructive, and it perhaps will help the rest of us here think about the rest of the world as we are busy thinking about our own here in Montreal and elsewhere in the world.
Hi there, this is Feroz Manji. I'm talking today to Gacheke. Gacheke has been a long-term activist, one of the co-founders of Mathare Social Justice Center, really active in one of the largest slums in Nairobi, where millions of shack dwellers live. Gacheke, you're working at the Mathare Social Justice Center. Tell me something about that.
So Mathare Social Justice Center is a community-based organization that is based in Mathare, which is one of the largest informal settlements in Kenya. And it has a long, long history since the era of Mau Mau. And that's tell you, Kenya has not changed for many years, where most of the informal workers live, ordinary poor people who works in different industries in Nairobi. And that's our home. And that's where we organize community around issues of human rights, social justice, and especially issue of extrajudicial killing that has affected most of the informal settlement in Kenya. As a part of the struggle for social justice, and trying to build an alternative, another better world from a grassroots.
Right. There was a report recently about 120 extrajudicial killings. This is part of a long history of extrajudicial killings in Kenya, is it not?
Yes, Feroz, as you know, Kenya is a former British colony, and the British used the same violence to repress our people. Mathare was the epicenter of this violence. As you know, after Mau Mau left Kiburi House, they located themselves in Mathare. Mathare historically was a quarry that was used to build Nairobi City. So you can see the history of Mathare is connected with the development of Kenya as a neocolonial state. So these systematic extrajudicial killings has a history, because it started those early years, then it's followed in early 90s when there was struggle for multi-party democracy, and Mathare people and many people from informal settlement were in the front line. And now we are in this era where the government has failed to provide an alternative for many young people. And what they are doing is extrajudicial killing. And we call it as like a cleansing of young people, or normalization of extrajudicial killing or violence from the police state. That every time in this informal settlement, whether it's Mathare, Dandora, Kibera, every day you will find three or two young people below 24 years to 13 being killed. And the police always really claim that these young people are involved in crime. But when you look in detail, the majority are innocent people. It is part of the criminalization of their young people in the informal settlement. So last month, we were celebrating a day of stopping of disappearance and extrajudicial killing. And that's a report was given out about that was contributed by many social justice centers on how this extrajudicial killing has continued to happen in the informal settlement.
Well, that's really serious. I mean, it seems to me now that there are at least 25 cases of COVID-19, coronavirus, in Kenya. How is it affecting the situation in Mathare?
It's very horrible, comrades. As you can see, the informal settlement, people have no water, no sanitation. People live in a very hopeless place. There's no home. It's just shack. And the challenge is that the Kenya government is just a coping solution from Europe and North America of lockdown, of telling people to stay away from home. But you can see this is not a solution to our ordinary people who live from hands to mouth. Ordinary mama mboga, people who are vending water, people who do mjengo, people who roundry washing with the hands. These are people who walk to go to get their daily income or daily livelihood. They're informal workers. They don't have an employment permanent. They earn from day to day work that they do. So when you say people to stay at home, it's very difficult. And at the same time, even when the government is promote hand washing, sanitizing. In Mathare and the majority of informal settlement, where 70% of the Kenyan people live, there is no water. The other thing is the water has been privatized. Mathare Social Justice Center and other social justice centers that are based in this informal settlement, like Dandora, Kayole, they have been doing a campaign to demand the government to bring water in these areas and stop a cartel that is controlling water pipes and selling water to different water points in Mathare and other informal centers. But this has not happened. So as they report 25 cases of COVID and many others being traced, almost 1,000 now, the big challenge is that this coronavirus is a disaster to majority of people who are living in Mathare, especially because they don't have basic needs, no housing, no water, no basics at all. So this is really very, very serious to our people. And inherently, it is, of course, death and hopelessness to the majority of the people. It's a major social crisis, even at the moment. Because also, as you know, our draconian state has started breaking up the market. Like in Kibera, reports are coming. People have been expelled in the market. Police are using their power and violence to tell people to go back at home. And what will happen, people will starve. And when people start starving, then that's that social crisis. And you will find even violence start emerging from this informal settlement. Not only Mathare, but Mathare is a symbol of that crisis that is shaping up now. Even now at the moment in Dandora here, there's no people. People are, there's a lot of tension because people don't have food because they earn in daily basis. This is that day when people are struggling to go to work. The matatus have raised their fare. Where you used to pay 50 bob, now you're paying 100. And it's very, very, very difficult. As we move on in the next 2 days, things will become very serious. Because of the biggest problem, the government is just copying solution from the Europe and copy pasting and use it to resolve our problem. Well, not knowing that Kenya is and Africa is different from China or maybe Europe. Issues of telling people to stay at your home may not apply here because majority of our people, especially in the formal settlement, not in the rural, but in Nairobi, they don't have home. They live in shacks. We have majority of the poor people in living in within the city of Nairobi who are homeless. Yeah, so those would be the first casualty of coronavirus. And the same thing, here the care system is very poor. So people are improvising different kind of containers, and then they put water there and soap for people to wash. But it's very, very difficult.
So what kind of actions are people like yourselves, the Mathare Social Justice Center, what kind of actions are you taking to try and change the situation?
First of all, what we are doing is a campaign to educate our people. Yes, this virus is real and it has affected very many people. Reading from what's happening in China, what's happening in Italy. First of all, it's doing the public education for hand washing. That's very important. As to tell our people, it's very important themselves because the government does not care. It's sometimes to start thinking what they can do. Second, as a social justice center, with other social justice center that form social justice center working group, we participated in issuing a statement to demand the government to provide water and healthcare sanitation in the informal settlement. We are also demanding that government also, in case there will be lockdown, they have to provide people with food because it will be an option of either getting affected by corona or starving. So we're doing that as a campaign, but not only alone, but with the social justice center. As you know, in Nairobi, we have 16 social justice centers that are spread across all informal settlement. So we are joined together as a network, and we are doing a campaign of monitoring and also demanding that the government must do social program within this informal settlement relating to food, water, that so that they can help mitigate the crisis of the coronavirus. Because the biggest problem is that in Nairobi, it will affect majority of the people who are in the informal settlement. So that's what we are doing. But many people are doing their self-help way. If we were showing the video, I could have shown some small container. People are cutting off, putting the water, putting washing soap. And that's how people are doing their self-help. And then from there, just sharing information on how people can help themselves. But the biggest problem is that majority of our people are in the informal settlement. They don't go to work. They don't get food. And that's the major crisis that is building up, which as a social justice center alone, we cannot be able to resolve unless we invite and demand for the government to play its role of solving this problem of food, water, and healthcare issues and supporting. And also we have a network of community health workers. So also we are demanding the government must engage the frontline health workers who are able to move in different community and different informal settlement. And they can able to help as many people. And especially the community organization like Mathare and Ghetto Foundation, also they are doing the door-to-door campaign and trying to see which are elderly people who cannot able to move out to get water and helping them.
So what has been the response of the government so far to your campaign?
The government has not responded very well. It's only the members of the local county representative women who invited some of our members to whether they can help to supply us with the tanks of putting water in some strategic spaces. But the government has responded. And the government is still having this crisis in the hand, and it seems it's they are becoming every day they are not able to give a clear strategy on how to deal with this problem. As you know, they had even a problem before because they had allowed a Chinese airline to land in Kenya with the number of visitors when the Chinese was in this epic problem. You know, recently also there is a priest who passed through Jomo Kenyatta. He went and conducted a mass somewhere. So the government also is not organized clearly to able to provide a clear strategy to safeguard lives of Kenyans from the spread of the coronavirus. So they have not responded to our statement, although many human rights organizations like Office of High Commission of Human Rights here in Nairobi, they have responded. And also they are inviting us, another community-based organization, to partner together mostly to monitor the trends and if there is any human rights violations happening. But the government specifically has not responded. Majority of people who have responded to our statement is mainstream civil society, but the government has not responded. But today also we planning also to demand that government also need to look for the prices of the best commodities like unga, paraffin, sugar, all these best needs that are needed by ordinary people. So because the price of ordinary commodity are skyrocketing, already the markets have been closed, the police are being used to close the market. So the government necessarily it has not come strongly to see how to deal with this crisis, especially affecting ordinary people and poor. But we are still doing the demand. I hope they respond. But as you know, comrades, this predatory state, it has never thought about the poor people. Healthcare problem has collapsed, as you know. It's a big challenge now. Just imagine if you're coming from Nairobi, you have to self-quarantine yourself in a private hotel or in a government hotel. And as Naomi Klein has talked about disaster capitalism, like Red Cross is charging for one night for a person to go and lodge there for self-quarantine, $10,000, like $1,000. So you see, we are having a major crisis. Even the private sector that is supposed to help people and not use this opportunity like extorting ordinary people. Just landing in, as you know, you land in Jomo Kenyatta Airport. You have to guarantee yourself for 14 days at your own cost. And then the option that the government has given, there's no one that is cheap. The leading one is like Boma Hotel that is owned by Red Cross. You can see that's disaster capitalism that Naomi Klein talked about, that it is being used to exploit poor people. The same way in the informal settlement, you are finding some tank of lorry of tank of water moving around and selling water to the poor people, as it has been happening all the time. Hospitals in Kenya have collapsed. It's very difficult even to find an hospital where you are not being charged very exorbitant fees. So we are having a major crisis, and this coronavirus has exposed in a history of in the last 30 years what we have been facing with the neoliberal capitalism economy, that ordinary people have been stripped bare. They have no social protection, no food. Now they are even where they used to go and toil, where they used to go and being exploited in an industrial area, in Juakali, all those places are being closed. So it's only one option. Either you go in the house and starve, or you get out and spread coronavirus. This corona is not only affecting our poor people, because even we read in the newspaper all over, even in Europe, the big guys are also being affected. So maybe it will be a powerful lesson for us, although it will be very painful, that we need to have a collective solution to our big problem of social services, healthcare, education, housing. We need to resolve them as a nation. But it's very difficult. It's a major crisis that is shaping up in Kenya. So the government has not responded to our statement well, although maybe they are saying that they'll do some intervention in their formal settlement. But this, it will be draconian because they are sending police. And you know, Kenyan police always, they have committed a lot of gross human rights violations. So it will be chaotic, and maybe people will revolt against being forced to stay indoor without food.
Well, this has been really interesting. I mean, one of the things that really surprised me was to hear the president, Uhuru Kenyatta, saying that that people should work from home. What does that mean for people in the settlements?
That's how a president is disconnected with the people. He talked about people working from home and talking about Gogoloon that will be used by people when they are working home through internet connection. That's tell you a president who is disconnected completely with the 7% of his population. You think he's just serving the literal middle class, because there are very few Kenyans who are middle class and have internet connection in their home and have a daily job where they go and report and they have a computer and they use computer. Even in schools that we have, very few schools have a penetration of the computer, internet and electricity. So you see, that's the president who is disconnected completely. But you know his history. He comes from the first big family, Jomo Kenyatta. They own a big chunk of land. They control major industry, insurance, banking. So he's nowhere connected to know what ordinary people in Dandora go through barefoot. People who walk from Dandora, Mathare, to Industrialia and come back in the evening. When you wake up early in the morning, you see these people trooping to Industrialia and they are paid how much? 300 per day. It's very, very difficult. So this is a president who is not connected with our reality. And I think the future for us, I think, is to use this crisis as a lesson that we are on our own. And that's why we are building a social justice movement, starting with Mathare, inspired other social justice center. Now we have across the country 30 social justice center. And we have formed a social justice center working group that connects this social justice center. And we are doing different campaigns. And that's why you see the issue of extrajudicial killing is no longer a backside issue. We have brought it to the national limelight and it's being discussed. And we are saying that as the coronavirus is affecting different people in the different class, like the people who will be hit very hard are all poor people by coronavirus. The way extrajudicial killing is concentrated in the form of settlement, because that's where we have a majority young people and they are being criminalized. So the same way coronavirus will affect us. This informs us that we have to think solution for our own people and build a movement that will help for us to fight for social justice and an economic model that will bring dignity and humanity to our people. And it will be a protracted struggle, but the coronavirus, for those who will survive, is a wake-up call that we are on our own and we have a class different with those people who can stay in their homes, use Google as loan, as Kenyatta would say, but ordinary pastoralist, peasant, they are no connection with that kind of proposal who is talking. He also had a meeting with bankers and he promised them that he'll build them up in case they have a crisis. The money they are borrowing from World Bank and IMF is a lot of these resources. They are not targeted to help ordinary poor people, urban poor or rural poor peasant. It's for the bankers. He had a meeting with the bankers and the captain of industry, Safaricom, which made billions of money through profit. Just imagine they have even not come in to subsidize their internet, even for the middle class, of ordinary mamamboga who is being sold to use the M-Pesa. Yes, they say that you can send 1,000 without paying a fee for sending, but that's very little, knowing Safaricom every year make a lot of profit per year. So Kenyatta is the president of the rich and he is not concerned with the poor people. That's his proposal.
I think this is a really important message you're putting out there, that the struggle against coronavirus is part of a class struggle. And I think that's something that not many people recognize. Well, Gacheke, this has been a really, really interesting and enlightening interview. I would like to get back to you perhaps in a few weeks' time again to catch up on what is going on. Thank you for taking time to talk with me.
Yes, doing this interview in the Dandora Community Justice Center, I would say there. I left Mathare because there they have some small internet connection. So.
Okay, well, if you manage to get a group together about what your actions are, keep me informed.
So I'll update you as we continue with our campaign and monitoring. And maybe if you have some, we're making also small fundraising for sanitation and small things like hand washing bucket, things like that. Yeah.
Asante sana. We'll speak soon.
Pamoja. Asante sana.
Gwen, that's fantastic. What an amazing piece. It really does remind me of the manifesto almost that I read from the community health workers of South Africa, the Durban communities around Durban in South Africa, which I read last week, and which was not nearly as eloquent as they have, but it very much the same basis of a failed leadership that has betrayed the people, and class will determine how this COVID epidemic is survived.
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, I do want to thank Feroz Manji for that piece. He's been producing a lot of other material, some of it coming out of South Africa as well. So we will be bringing some of his work to the airwaves in the weeks to come. We will also are trying to put together something similar for Malawi. I'm trying to track down somebody to talk to about what's going on there. So there will be plenty of material coming in the next few weeks. I wanted to pull back a little bit, perhaps, and recommend an article for our listeners to read. It's, of course, directly linked to what Gacheke Gachichi was saying, excuse me. It's an article in the New York Times, and it is called "For Autocrats and Others, Coronavirus is a Chance to Grab Even More Power." And as we are seeing in our own communities and around the world, the state and governments have certainly stepped up to roll out a series of measures that certainly have could potentially play a role in helping to stop the spread of the virus and protect us. And so most of us are very compliant with these measures, and we feel justified in doing so, even as activists, we understand this necessity. But we also need to be vigilant, because what happens if these powers are not rolled back after the virus has been dealt with? In many countries in the world, even as the virus is ravaging through communities, there will be governments that will be using this to settle accounts, to further repress communities. We're seeing it happening already. This article does a great job of going through and citing examples all over the world of where this is already happening, where it is likely to happen. There's one quote in the article, and I'll leave it at this. It's the UN Special Rapporteur on Counterterrorism and Human Rights, who's quoted in the article as saying, "We would have a parallel epidemic of authoritarian and repressive measures following close, if not on the heels, of a health epidemic." So already sort of the warning call of we need to be careful about this. We do not want to emerge from this with a world that is under authoritarian control and no way of rolling back the legislation that's been passed. And the author of the article, I'm trying to find her name here, sorry, but she says, "Few sunset provisions are there to ensure powers will be rescinded once the viral threat has passed." So something for us to think about in our own communities and countries, and also thinking with those around the world, and certainly people in Africa who deal with very authoritarian governments already. What does this mean? We're going to have to be ready for the struggle after coronavirus has passed.
We are Project Liberia, Mama Liberia. Must all rise. Let's stand together. Everything is possible. It could be your mama, your papa, brother and sister. Let's stand together to fight this deadly disease now. Walk on the world we're living for the
sanctity, no security, everything impossible. You could be your mother, your father, even your sister. Let's stand together to fight this deadly disease now. From Asia to Europe,
Corona.
Europe to America,
Corona.
America to Africa,
Corona.
Take precaution.
Corona.
It could be a mama,
Corona.
A brother, sister, a father.
Corona.
Let's stand together.
Corona.
Mama Liberia.
Corona.
God bless Mama Liberia and the rest of the world. President cough or sneeze, the droplets land on surfaces and are picked up on the hands of others and spread further. People catch the virus when they touch their infected hands to their mouth, nose, or eyes. It follows that the single most important thing you can do to protect yourself is keep your hands clean by washing them frequently with soap and water or hand sanitizer. What is the incubation period of COVID-19? It is clear that symptoms are showing up in people within 14 days of exposure to the virus. What are the symptoms of COVID-19? COVID-19 symptoms include cough, fever, shortness of breath. In rare cases, COVID-19 can lead to severe respiratory problem, kidney failure, or death. If you have a fever or any kind of respiratory difficulty, such as coughing and shortness of breath, call your doctor.
Coronavirus is real, but together we can fight it.
From Asia to Europe, from Europe to America,
Corona.
America to Africa,
Corona.
Take precaution.
Corona.
It could be a mama,
Corona.
A brother, a sister, a father.
Corona.
Let's stand together.
Corona.
Mama Liberia.
Corona.
That music was by President George Weah of Liberia. Liberia, as you may remember, was most hard hit by the Ebola epidemic of 2014 to 2016. And at that time, Weah was not president, but he actually put together a song. Apparently, he has his own studio behind the church that he goes to Liberian capital. And so he has put together this song, "Let's Stand Together and Fight Coronavirus." It's, the backup band is the group of ladies is called the Rabbis, and of course it's very important because Liberia, having lived through this, Weah has taken this very seriously and has worked very hard to bring what limited resources a country like Liberia has to bear in the fight here. So moving that along as a segue. The Canadian Network for Cuba is campaigning to raise some funds to support Cuba's overseas efforts to fight the COVID, and included in there is Africa, of course, because over 40 countries have asked Cuba for help.
Nuestro país no lanza bombas contra otros pueblos, ni manda miles de aviones a bombardear ciudades. Nuestro país no posee armas nucleares ni armas químicas ni armas biológicas. La decena de miles de científicos con que cuenta nuestro país y sus médicos han sido educados en la idea de salvar vidas. Y ese es el orgullo de nuestros médicos y de nuestro centro de investigación. Decenas de miles de médicos cubanos han prestado servicios internacionalistas en los lugares más apartados e inhóspitos. Un día dije que nosotros no podíamos ni enviaríamos nunca o nunca realizaríamos ataques preventivos y sorpresivos contra ningún oscuro rincón del mundo, pero que en cambio nuestro país será capaz de enviar los médicos que se necesiten a los más oscuros rincones del mundo.
And Cuba's history in Africa goes back a long, long way. I have on the phone, on Skype here, Elizabeth Hill, who is the co-chair of the Canadian Network on Cuba, which brings together groups of solidarity groups from across Canada who support Cuba and its efforts to survive the American blockade and develop and become a real stand-up nation, and it is a stand-up nation. And she's in Toronto, where she's also part of the Toronto Network, Cuba Solidarity. Hello, Elizabeth. How are you?
Oh, hi there. Yes, I'm co-chair of the Canadian Network on Cuba, which started almost 20 years ago to bring together different solidarity groups from Vancouver to Halifax. I think now there are about 19 groups, and we coordinate various solidarity activities with Cuba, tours of musicians or speakers. We have a volunteer work brigade that goes to Cuba. The 27th one was scheduled for this year, but it's been postponed till November. And we organize campaigns such as fundraising campaigns. And also we're very active in trying to counter the misinformation about Cuba.
And there's plenty of that. That can you just tell us a little bit about what Castro was saying in that clip that we heard just at the beginning here?
I think the main message of that clip is that Cuba sends doctors, not soldiers. Cuba is has a different approach to its international relations, and it's one of solidarity and cooperation. And that is very different. I mean, he didn't use those words. Fidel was speaking in a very inspiring, he could have said that yesterday, given the situation the world is in right now. But the reason he had such a wide view is because he looked at the world in a very humanistic and a very, not just for the moment, but the whole future and what is needed.
Well, and that's exactly how the Cuban Revolution has gone on. It's always been looking at what can it do for the good of the people, and that's true of health and health preparedness in Cuba, isn't it?
It's very true, and I remember reading a book from an American some years ago on Cuban healthcare from cradle to grave. And one of the things that I took from that is how when the Cubans were fighting in the mountains against Batista, and Che Guevara, who was a doctor, was with them, and he was treating not only their own combatants, but also the peasants in the area who had no health care. And I think that was kind of a start of an approach for Cuba after the revolution to see health care as a human right. And that's why right away, when many doctors had left Cuba, Cuba immediately started to train doctors. And they were trained in a different way. They were trained to treat the whole patient, not trained for making a large salary or taking advantage, but to really treat the whole person. And they have a universal healthcare system. It includes dental. I don't think it includes the medicines, but medicines are very, very inexpensive in Cuba.
Well, and on that score, Cuba also developed its manpower resources, but its material resources by starting a whole pharmaceutical industry.
That's right. It was in the 1980s, I understand, that Fidel recognized that they, because of the blockade and everything, and because of the dengue that was a disease going across Cuba, that they needed to develop their own pharmaceuticals. And it was around that time, I don't know if I have the name correct, but interferon was developed. And this was a medicine that was used in West Africa against Ebola. It's used against many, many different diseases, including dengue. And now it has proven very useful in China in combating the COVID-19. However, unfortunately, the United States has told countries not to ask Cuba for help. But in spite of that, more than 40 countries have asked. And this is being used to help treat people. In China, very, very large recovery rate. And I think a large part of that was toward this medicine, which is being produced in China based on Cuba's development.
But totally ignored by the North American mainstream press.
Unfortunately, yes, I haven't seen anything in it. But on Facebook and on the internet, there are lots of wonderful stories. In fact, this is a time when I feel very proud to be working in Cuban solidarity. It is the bright light, the sunshine that comes through in all the news that I'm spending a lot of time on the internet now at home. But it's when you're reading about the number of deaths, the increase in cases, situation in the United States, which is horrendous. The bright thing I see is what Cuba is doing when 50 some doctors arrived in Italy to help the situation there, doctors and nurses. In various countries in the Caribbean, Cuba is there helping, in spite of the risk, in spite of the cost, because it's the right thing to do.
And that's the way they do it at home as well. Can you talk a little bit about how they're dealing with COVID on the ground in Cuba?
Well, right away, they started their community programs where people are checked in their house. I was just talking to a Cuban living in Toronto, and his mother in their neighborhood in Havana. Every day, they have community doctors, knocks on the door and checks up on how they're doing. They have social distancing, which is, I should call it physical distancing, which can be very difficult because Cubans are very touchy people. They hug when they meet strangers, and that is difficult. But they're doing everything they can to prevent the spread. Cuba has a very strong preventative approach to healthcare, and that is working. I actually just received an email from a dear Canadian friend living in Havana that they just started every night at 9 o'clock, all over the country, not just Havana. People go outside, they put on their porch lights, and they shout and bang and make noise in support of the healthcare workers. It's very emotional. In fact, it lasts 5 minutes. She said it's very uplifting to see this happening.
Our show is about Africa. Do you have any news about how Cuba's going to interact with Africa around these issues?
We haven't received much news on African countries that Cuba is going into, but I know that when the outbreak of Ebola in West Africa, Cuba was there in Sierra Leone, Guinea, Liberia, working and helping at a time when it was extremely dangerous. And they actually help reduce the mortality rate from 50% to 20%. And they were there. And in Angola, after helping the Angolan people in South Africa defeat the apartheid, Cuba stayed. And they sent doctors. They sent educational teachers to help Angola in rebuilding. So there's a very close connection of Cuba and Africa, coming from the feeling of wanting to give back because slaves were brought from Africa to Cuba. In fact, Cubans see themselves as Afro-Cubans, and there's a very, very close connection. When Nelson Mandela was released from jail in South Africa, The first country he visited was Cuba, a very warm relationship between him and Fidel. And that's continued.
Well, this is just amazing. Do you want to just talk briefly about the campaign that you're just mounting right now, the CNC Fundraising for Cuba, a new stage?
Yes, this started, and we had a meeting on Sunday by Skype, and we've launched a campaign similar to ones we've had in the past. But this one is because of Cuba's international humanitarian efforts, and that is a heavy cost to them to send these health workers around. We are raising funds to support them in those efforts. Probably you have not heard, but Cuba has what's called the Henry Reeve International Brigade. And this is the brigade that has gone after earthquakes, gone to Pakistan, Guatemala, Chile. It helped in after the earthquake in Haiti. And so our organization, I think it's several years ago when there was a terrible hurricane in Cuba, did a fundraising campaign. At that time, we raised $80,000. These funds are sent, 100% are sent to Cuba. We don't have any administration. We pay for any postage of thank you cards and all of those things. We pay for the transfer so that all of the funds go. This campaign we've just launched is to support Cuba in its work against COVID-19. And it's just launched, and we're hoping that we can raise funds to help them in their efforts.
Well, Elizabeth, I want to thank you so much for these insights into Cuba and its role, Cuba and its system and its leadership and its people have been role models for Africa. We see what happens when we don't have good organization and good political will. And so people admire Cuba enormously. Thank you for helping us understand that.
You're very welcome. If people want more information, we have a website. It's www.CanadianNetworkOnCuba.ca.
And I'll put the letter that you set up as a fundraising letter for Cuba, I'll put it on our website, which is ckut.ca/Amandla.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Good day.
Okay, bye-bye.
Lambetina aduna amna Senegal duguna ci gox yi amna ñi mu dal nañu moy tu salte setal question de santé nationale
babul ba te feko message bi da fa clair wel ñongi ñaan corona dem ter waruñu xajal le dañ bolo mën ko guerre dimbal la germande ci dekkando yi frère
ar sa pop ar ñi la jégué tamit ku nekk def sa walu ñu daan ko amul salit sa ka tek ci sa loxo waro gene tuflit sa ka ci mushu wa so pare yop mbalit
mbassa yaram tangul bat bop ci di tim ngay wop xey di liw ba di xonk rongoñ di rogalat sa ka di ci xet jafé jafé noy sa dal ci gatal dalay musal ci corona virus
ar ñi la jégué faga ro gan fa ju di gey nan ko jafé ar sa bop ar ñi la jégué faga ro gan fa ju di gey nan ko jafé lembena aduna bi lay jago ya tuna lembena aduna bi lay jago ya tuna.
Il est question de prévenir, évitons les débats puérils. L'heure est grave, tous unis, faisons un sur le ring. L'union est vitale, le respect des consignes capitales pour vos querelles de bas étage. Ceci n'est pas normal, vous deux gueux. Vos vidéos pour le buzz, désintox sur désintox. Ceci n'est pas normal, vous deux gueux. On parle de millions de vies humaines, le Sénégalais est expert en tout, mais à chacun son domaine.
Did I do loss a wahule? Fris, fris to gain. Some guy man a moy to lend. Fris, fris to gain. Lohoy, yom rahas lend. Ah, sabop, ah, nila jagge. Fagarogan for you, dig lay in and go jaffe. Ah, sabop, ah, nila jagge. Fagarogan for you, dig lay in and go jaffe. Lembena atuna. Bile jago yatuna. Lembena atuna. Bile jago yatuna.
Thank you very much, Doug and Gwen. Again, my name is Helden. Quick question about these times that we're in. So on the African continent, I think it was last month that the last Ebola patient was actually released from the hospital. And now coronavirus in 2020 just hitting hard. How are you guys just processing that? And how ready do you think the continent is for this type of pandemic? Gwen, I'll go with you first.
Oh. Okay, well, I mean, I was literally on my way to the airport to go to Malawi for almost a month and had to cancel because Trudeau had just announced all Canadians overseas need to come back. And a lot of that trip was to go visit family, to go visit Doug and Nellie's family and just reconnect with friends and family there. But a lot of it was also around health issues with a little clinic that is in the community. And without, sorry, are you hearing noise upstairs?
Yeah.
So as part of this context, there's a young family upstairs and with two young children, one of whom is autistic, and these are tough times for families. So one of them's having a tantrum upstairs, and I really understand, not easy times for anybody. Anyway, so the health situation in a country like Malawi, minus COVID-19, is so challenging. Malaria, malnutrition, diabetes, TB,
HIV
you name
AIDS.
It. HIV AIDS, of course. And so, you know, we were without the pandemic, we were going to reconnect with people who are really struggling to deal with those health issues. And it is a health system that is so thin on the ground. So thin on the ground as it is. And it's such a struggle. There is no real national health care in Malawi. It's sporadic. Some people have access, most people don't. The access they do have is often really, really inadequate. It is such a struggle for people to get basic health care there. So frankly, I shudder. I shudder at the thought of what this is. That said, I also was just enormously inspired last time I was there and then the time I was there 11 years before by the ability of community to come together and look after each other, the ingenuity of people on the ground, Malawians who with so little find ways to look after each other. So I know that all that ingenuity and creativity is there and is intact. But it's not going to be enough if this pandemic hits Malawi the way it has hit Italy, for example.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's it for tonight with Amandla here at CQUT 90.3. We'll be back again next week with more news, briefings, and analysis from the continent of Africa. Stay tuned to Jazz Euphonium. And listen, we've got to say thank you to the people who keep us on the air. CKUT has allowed us to broadcast, well, Gwen since 1987, and myself since 1996 or seven, and we really appreciate their efforts, and we are all sitting in our homes in splendid isolation. Oh no, what is it called? Social isolation, and this is all happening on Zoom and Skype and pulling it together like this. Thank you so much for the staff at CQT for putting us together, holding it together, keeping us on the air. Community radio is essential as an alternative voice to the dominant media. We are getting nothing but the dominant line off all the main stations. So all the stuff that's coming out in CQT is really important. Thank you so much.
Africa unite, Fatsilele.
expecting for you. TKUT 90.3
FM. Hi, I'm Morel. I'm shopping at the Jean Talon Market, and you are listening to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal.